Well, hello everyone. Welcome once again to Kosher Thoughts
and Pickled Opinions.
I'm Bracken.
I'm Gabriel. And eventually I'm going to add drums to that introduction, I think.
Oh yeah, no, that would sound great. We should totally do that. Man. That would be great. We should do that. Maybe next time.
Coming soon in 2022.
Yeah, you know, 2022 isn't that far off. That's crazy.
I know.
We're past halfway anyway.
Yeah, no, it's hard to believe that in less than 3 weeks, I'll be head off to Chicago going to school in August, yeah.
I was just thinking the same thing. Time has gone by very, very fast, and we've been talking about some solutions. Even he's going to be attending college in Chicago, like you mentioned, yep. And I myself will be attending college in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. So we're going to be... Well, let's just say too far to record on site. So
what, man? We can meet halfway, get a coffee. No.
Yeah, no. That'd be,
I
what,
love you,
six
but
hours?
Not that much, man.
I'm guessing 6 hours. I don't know. But,
well, Chicago's about a six-hour drive from where we are now, and then add the two and a half hours to Cape Girardeau.
So, it's going to be a bit.
Yeah.
But regardless, we're looking into some offline options, or online options, rather.
Most likely it'll just be through Discord, and we'll just be changing into a probably once a month upload.
Or rather kind of what we've done this time. I think it's been about a month, hasn't it? Maybe more? I don't know.
I'm going to fact check real quick. We didn't come prepared.
Yes. It's definitely been a while. Life's been busy. I'm sure you all understand with the current events going on. Independence Day just happened. There's been a lot of really interesting press briefings, a lot of really interesting news stories, none of which we're going to cover today, but I'm sure you guys know.
Thank God.
Yeah, exactly.
Our last episode, episode 7, I Will Make One Host Disappear, premiered on the 16th of May, 2021.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was a good one. Yeah, no, he didn't death curse me or anything, but
Avada Kedavra.
Yeah. Oh no, I gotta go, guys. Sorry.
So yeah. You actually started listening or watching those movies, right?
Yes, I had seen the first one and second one and part of the third one when I was a kid, but
right.
I guess lost interest and for a while and just kind of, well, hadn't seen the rest of them since then, and now. I just realized that 10 years ago, the Deathly Hallows Part 2 came out, and I felt insanely old. So I'm just like, well, he made an episode about it. It's been a while since I've, you know, seen these or gotten into this. So I just did a marathon, and we've been watching them all this week, me and my family. So good times. But
you have not read the books, right?
I read, let's see, when I was a kid, I know I read The Goblet of Fire, and I read... The Prisoner of Azkaban. Read them out of order. It was only because I had the hard copy secondhand.
For shame. For shame. You're going to have to read those books. That's your homework assignment. I know what I'm getting you for Christmas.
Man, complete
set.
There you go. That'd be crazy, man. I wonder what those go for nowadays. But
I don't know.
But now that I think about it, speaking of Christmas, that's like, it's not like it's around the corner, but with how fast... And how slow this year has gone by in other aspects. I don't know. We're going to be going to college, and then Christmas is going to be just a few homework assignments later, really.
Right.
So beware. We're going to try and make it as long as possible so everybody's got enough time to do Christmas shopping and whatnot. But man, this has just been an interesting year. Regardless, I guess we should probably figure out what our topic is going to be for today.
I got the jar already open because I've had some complaints from people saying that it hurts their ears.
Really?
Opening the...
Really? Man, and I actually haven't checked the... I guess we should later on check the KTPO comments email.
And our topic today, which I know I'm not the official officiator of the pickle jar, but our topic today is war movies. What makes a good war movie?
All right. Well, what makes a great war movie? What are some conditions in your mind?
Instantly historical accuracy. That pops up to my mind. There are some exceptions to this rule, but the typically I like my historical movie or my war movies to be historically accurate.
I would agree with that. I guess if I was to write down a list on my end of like the top five, I guess qualities or characteristics of a great war movie, in my just my opinion, I would agree with you. Historical accuracy would be number one. Typically, number two would be casting, because you can have a terrible script, and sometimes if you have really great actors, it can still be a great movie. Like,
yeah,
you know. So that would be next. And then effects, do they need to be practical or CGI? I'm not sure on that.
I think you can blend a bit of both, honestly. There's, especially the, or I would say the further back in history you go, you're going to have to rely a whole lot more on CGI in order to get some of those graphics. Like, I can't go back to Rome, you know, I can't go to Rome and, film a time period of the Roman Empire at that time. I have to rely on CGI in order to make that back up to what it would have been.
I definitely agree with you there. Yeah, to get authenticity, I suppose you would need to use modern day technology, as weird as that sounds. Yeah, so I guess CGI, practical effects, just effects in general, artistic yeah. usage of both. I think you right. need a good mix of both, at least nowadays. To have a balanced movie. What about you? What else do you think of?
Just pacing. With historical movies in particular, I find that they can either tend to be really, really boring, just because they're not paced well. You have so much context of history. I think the one that comes to mind as far as pacing being just horrible. Gods and Generals.
Okay.
Gods and Generals. It was a prequel, I believe, to the probably one of my favorite war movies of all time, Gettysburg. And it kind of focuses on Stonewall Jackson, but the pacing is just so slow. So incredibly slow and painful to watch. And it's just like, because you have to remember, it's like, well, for those of you who don't know, it's a four-hour film. Just like Gettysburg is a four-hour film, but Gettysburg does a lot more. It's keeping the action pacing, and you already know who's going to win before you put the DVD in the player. Mm-hmm. But they manage to keep you suspense. You're worried about the characters of the film. So, yeah, pacing is incredibly important. Being able to condense a huge amount of history into a certain amount of runtime.
Mm-hmm. No, I would agree with that quite a bit. I was when you mentioned that, I thought of Darkest Hour. That is the full title of the movie, right? Or am I just
Darkest
you know the one
Hour.
I'm talking about? It's the one with Winston Churchill.
Yeah, that's Darkest Hour.
Yeah. I mean, that one, it's a great film, but to me, when I watched it, the pacing.
Oh, I thought the pacing was phenomenal in that one.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Okay, so we have just a different take on that movie. Yeah, go ahead.
What I really want to do is I want to take Dunkirk, mm-hmm. and I want to take Darkest Hour, and I just want to kind of splice those two on top of each other.
Ooh, that would be beautiful.
And then, but I thought the pacing of Dunkirk was really slow, but they did that in... they did that on purpose because you're supposed to feel suspenseful. And mm-hmm. I just thought if you watched Darkest Hour and Dunkirk at the same time, because it's the exact same story, just one from the political side of it at home and then from the soldier side of it, it's just like tensions are really high on both sides, but it's a lot more, it's faster paced. It feels like it's faster paced over in England than it did over in France.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you there. That would be definitely I want to see actually a completely different movie that just it does splice both,
yeah,
but does just as good, if not a better job. You'd have to have all the characters present at the beginning.
Okay,
you know, that would be
incredibly
wow.
hard.
I've never thought about that. That's great. I guess outside of that would be, for me, backstory probably.
So is important. Emotional attachment to the character? Is that?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Just have it that, you know, the ethos side of it. You know, because even if you have a really, well, can you have a really great script without a good backstory? No, I guess even if you have a lot of potential to have an excellent movie, let's say you have great effects, great casting. If you don't have at least halfway convincing backstory,
right?
It's just really all it is. It's kind of like one of those John Wick movies. You know, right. Not that I don't like John Wick, but the whole movie is just him shooting people in the face because his dog died. You know,
exactly.
all four of them.
If you can't, feel like you're either rooting for a person or wanting to see a person die. then it's not. Because it's interesting because you're having with war movies, specifically historical war movies, you're having to combine both the cinematography of what makes a good movie and still try and stay true to historical, what's that word? Accurate. Be historically accurate and at the same time be a compelling movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just off the top of my head, I mean, Inglourious Bastards, you're wanting that guy to die.
Yeah,
you're
absolutely.
Wanting that one villain to die.
Mm-hmm.
You hate him with every ounce of your body, but at the same time, there's still this kind of air of, you know, he doesn't seem like that bad of a guy until you get further into the movie, and it's just like, he's a ruthless killer, and he's...
Yeah, no, that was a great movie. That, honestly, that, that is in my top five movies.
Oh, wow.
For war movies. That's number five.
Wow.
It's kind of... It's either three or number five. I know it should be either number four or number five, but number four is definitely number four on my list. I guess we should probably go through that. Like, what, if you had to say off the top of your head, would be your top five, maybe, or just a few top movies.
Okay, a few top movies. Okay. Well, number one is always, it's got to be Gettysburg. I loved it the first time I watched it, and whenever I was on a car ride, a long car trip, the one movie I would always want to bring was Gettysburg. I mean, you can ask my mom and dad, but if we had a DVD player in the car, I was bringing Gettysburg.
That's
my siblings hated me for it.
No, Gettysburg's a great film.
So yeah, that would be my number one. Definitely. I really liked Midway. That was a good movie. Yeah, it's hard to choose movies. Mm-hmm. I have on here the Band of Brothers TV series. That was a really good one. I read the book.
Yeah.
And it was just phenomenal, and you really are emotionally attached to those guys. So Monuments Men, that would probably be another.
I haven't seen that one.
You haven't seen that one?
No.
Oh, great casting. You've got George Clooney, you've got Matt Damon, you've got a few other people that I am blanking on their names, but it's, I mean, regardless of casting, it's just a really inspiring movie. That's, it's all about this team of guys who just go in and trying to go into these battlefields and try to recover art.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't remember which art piece it was, but there was one guy who actually died defending a piece of art. And so that kind of is just kind of, that's the kind of war cry for them. Just like, this one guy died for this piece of art. So you want them to find that piece of art before the end of the movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense. You know, it kind of gives a compelling... Yeah, I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
I'll have to give that one a watch.
It's good. It's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well.
So, yeah, that'd be... That's it for me.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, here's a question.
Okay.
Before we go into my list of what I would say my favorite ones, can a good or a great war movie have comedy as a... Not just a portion, because, you know, soldiers are pretty funny people sometimes, but as a focus. Can a great war movie have comedy as a focus of the film, in your opinion?
I think as long as you're not making a mockery of the history, I think, yeah, you can definitely have a comedic war movie. I can't think of anyone that comes to mind right now, but yeah. As long as you're not making a mockery of the history that it's based upon, no, I don't see a problem with it.
Okay, because I've asked that question to a couple different people different times in my life, and I've gotten different answers. I've heard people say, no, that makes a mockery, just like you said, of the history, right, and the reason it was there. And then my question is, well, could it do that and still be a great movie? I think potentially.
Well, yeah, I think so. As long as it just depends on if you're going to, what's the main focus of the movie, I guess, is the part.
Yeah, because then is it a great war movie or just a comedy film? I guess I see your point.
And if it, well, and also it's like you can have a great war movie, it can be a comedy as well, and still at the same time, you know, if it's meant to be a historical, historically accurate war movie, I don't want to be rolling around in my seat laughing.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. I would agree with you. That would actually be a terrible movie, in my opinion, because then it's almost like you're, you know, mocking somebody's sacrifice, which, right, I agree. So I'm going to give you my list now. My number one is Saving Private Ryan. The accuracy of that film. Good. I actually had a great grandfather, veteran of that war. He was he was there on D-Day, survived, made it to the interior of France. He was alive like a month, then he ended up getting shot by a sniper, and regardless, amazing tales he told me as a child. He's passed away now, sadly, but he lived into his 80s even after receiving a head wound. He survived a headshot from a sniper.
Wow.
That is just an amazing story. Maybe I'll have to relate it some other time. However, I was once watching the movie Saving Private Ryan with him, and I remember he just looked over to me as a young child. I wasn't too young to be watching the film. I want to say I was about 12.
Okay.
And he said, Bracken, this movie right here, this scene, the D-Day scene where they're going onto the beach here, this is perfectly accurate to what I saw. Not a single bit of this exaggerated. Mm-hmm. And it definitely wasn't less than this either.
I think that's got something to do with Tom Hanks is a very, he wants to be very historically minded. Mm-hmm. I think he worked on Band of Brothers also. It's like he really loves that time period of history. So,
no, I would agree with you, yeah, for sure. I remember how much that impressed upon me. Just the movie is really great to me because that one scene, the beginning, that really makes the whole movie for me.
Right.
I mean, and I would say for a lot of other people, but for myself especially, when he said that to me, I was thinking, I watched that scene. He goes, none of this is fake here.
Right.
It makes it even more amazing. I'll have to go and watch it again. But that's my number one. In the historical aspect, I mean, there are definitely a few things that are not accurate, right, about that film. Some fantastic things that happened.
Well, yeah.
But
yeah,
in that one scene, it's perfectly accurate to everything that happened.
Well, and I think me personally, I want to spend probably months over in Europe later in my lifetime. And I do want to stand on the beaches at Normandy. And probably what I'll be thinking of is that scene from Saving Private Ryan, like just imagining what these guys went through, trying to imagine what they went through, because in all honesty, the bravery and the sacrifice that they went through,
mm-hmm,
just in the first hour of alone of what
days really, but yeah, the first hour alone. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it's incredible and hard to imagine.
I mean, just sitting there, I mean, before you've even gotten there, you're vomiting, you're seeing people vomit because they're stressed out. Plus you just got seasickness and whatnot. They're passing out, you know, pills and everything. And then once you get there, you don't know what's going to happen until they lower down that door, and then just a hail of bullets rips through the front, the people in front of you. If you're lucky, you get out. You see, you know, people getting blown up. Just, you know, that film is honestly scary in a lot of aspects, but just realizing that that scene is accurate is amazing. But that's definitely my number one. I'll quit talking about that one. Great film, though. Definitely worth a watch. At least that beginning scene. My second one would be Fury. It's relatively historically accurate. Has some fantastic parts in it, obviously. But at the same time, great movie. Got Brad Pitt, a couple others in there. I don't know. I like that whole tank aspect, that the lone tank at the end there. It's a great movie, Fury. And then my I mentioned comedy earlier, and this is why. Number three and number four here on my list. Number three is Tropic Thunder. We all know this is a comedy movie. It's a war movie to some. Some maybe the greatest war movie they've ever watched. For me, it's borderline between just straight up comedy and a war movie, because it's got a lot of the war aspects, and then it's making fun of the history as well. And then it's also set in modern day. So it's more of a comedy movie than a war movie to me. But at the same time, it's got enough really just great aspects in it that it's included on my list.
Right.
Then number four, this is what I would call a war movie that has comedy as a focus, but still pulls off being a war movie. It's Jojo Rabbit. Have you ever seen it?
I have not, no.
Okay, well, to not spoil the movie, it's about a little boy. He's, I want to say, 7, 8 at the oldest. Okay. Little kid. He is in Berlin towards the end of the war.
Okay.
Before Victory Over Europe Day.
Right.
But as Stalin and the United Forces, they form that alliance, and then they go after Berlin. And he joins the, I think it's the Jungervolk, or I can't remember exactly how they said it, but the Lightning Children. It was basically everybody joined it as kids in Berlin. It was Adolf Hitler's camp. Anyway, some things happen, but the whole focus of the movie is, you remember when you were a kid when you had imaginary friends? If that ever happened to you. He had an imaginary friend. His name is Jojo, and Jojo Belzer is his name, and his imaginary best friend was Hitler. And it's a comedic deal because Hitler, as his imaginary friend, does some pretty silly things. But at the same time, it's a great war movie because even though it's done through the eyes of a child, a young child, you have a lot of really historic aspects to it. Like when they overtake Berlin.
Right.
It's actually kind of sad. You don't see it in a negative light, but it's just kind of in the periphery of Jojo's vision.
Uh-huh.
He's fighting and everything, but they're sending these kids out. You know, they've got little kids fighting in the streets, kids with grenades, you know, strapped to their backs, going towards the Americans. Atrocities of war that actually happened. But it brings that somber aspect to the movie. So Jojo Rabbit, great movie, worth a watch. It's just got a lot of really cool parts of that movie. And then, 5 and 6, I'll just go through really quickly. 5 would be Inglourious Basterds. Love that film. It's a great movie. The villain, very compelling. You got Christoph Waltz, who was, what was the guy's name? He was the Jew hunter, right? But Hans Landa, that was his name. He was Hans Landa in the movie. And just a great, great guy. Then you have, you know, Brad Pitt, Lieutenant Aldo Raine. Just great movie. Love that movie. Top Gun would be my 6th movie, though. So I know it's not a weird number to have 6, but that's why. It's kind of just an honorable mention, really. It's not exactly a war movie, but it is Cold War. So it's just a great movie, and a lot of people join the Navy because of it.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah. You're talking about Saving Private Ryan, the opening sequence of D-Day.
Yeah.
All that stuff. And that just reminded me of, have you ever watched Hacksaw Ridge?
Yes, I actually love that movie, but it would be in the honorable mention section for me.
Yeah, it's just, if you're looking for a very vivid World War II movie that is not afraid to show the guts and gore, honestly. I believe it's the Battle of Okinawa.
Yeah.
That it's positioned at, and it's about a medic who's just going back and forth into the fray, just getting these guys out of harm's way.
54 men he saved or something in one night.
I think so, yeah.
That is definitely a good movie. It's got, same guy that played Spider-Man during those amazing Spider-Man movies. Andrew Garfield, that's who. He actually does a really great job, and it's about, like you said, a medic, but he's a pacifist, so he doesn't carry a weapon.
Right.
Very interesting movie. I think I've rented that film 3 times. I should have just bought it. Yeah, but I've seen that movie quite a few times. Excellent movie.
Yeah.
Worth a watch.
Definitely. So we kind of went through and we talked about our favorite ones. I would venture to say, and we kind of talked about what makes a good war movie. So how do our favorite movies kind of line up on that? Or rather, for sake of time, how does our favorite movie line up along those lines that we said, you know, historically accurate? Is it paced well? Is it casted well? Is it are the effects practical? Are they, like, how does... So I think you said Saving Private Ryan was your favorite. Mm-hmm. So how would you kind of rank it from a 1 to 10 scale of historical accuracy? Where would you kind of rank it?
So Saving Private Ryan, I would say 10. Except I would say I can't do that because the second half isn't historically accurate. Yeah, I kind of feel like you have
to split it in two.
Yeah.
Right.
The first half, 10, 12, if that was possible. Second half... Well, it's a story, so we'll go with a 6, just because a lot of the aspects are very historically accurate. But then again, the sniper scene and everything, it's like, probably not.
So we'll give it an average of 8.5 on the historical scale.
I'd go 8.9, just because the beginning's so amazing.
it's hard to do that to it, but...
Yeah, it's just such a classic. No, I like this, yeah. We're kind of going through the tiers here. Okay, yeah. So we'll go... Let's make a list here. Right, okay. Saving Private Ryan... And then 8.9. All right.
Yeah.
8.9. You're still my favorite, though. Okay. I'm actually curious. I'll check that later. But I am going to be curious. I wonder if some of these were box office losses, some of our favorite films. I know you mentioned Gods and Generals is like one of your favorite, right?
No. Oh, no. Not? That one is so boring and dull.
Oh, okay. Okay. I thought it was one that you liked a lot.
No, it was Gettysburg that I liked a lot.
Oh, okay, but yeah, no, the prequel. I actually looked that up while you were talking about it. That movie was a box office loss.
The Gods and Generals. Yeah. It was not good.
If you had to guess the dollar figure that they lost on that movie.
I don't even want to know.
Yeah, it's $61 million.
Oh, wow.
That hurts. That's like a couple of lives. You know, that's like... Those are fortunes that have been lost in that movie.
Yeah.
Man.
Ouch.
Man.
So, Saving Private Ryan, historical accuracy, we kind of gave it an 8.5, 8.9 out of 10, just due to the fact of the, though I think it does do a good job of, not saying that we have to defend these movies from our own criticisms, but it does a really good job of transitioning from a historically accurate film to a story based on history. So I think it does a really good job of that and deserves an honorable mention for that. So how would you say it was paced? On a scale of 1 to 10, would you say that you did it.
Saving Private Ryan?
Yeah. Did you ever think, like, one would be it was moving way too slow or it was moving way too fast. You never felt like you had a break to just breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Or you just felt like it was dragging its feet along. So that would be one. Ten would be, like, it's perfectly paced. You have that moments of fresh air where you're, like, okay, levity and kind of, like, that stuff. if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I would give it a 6.5.
A 6.5?
Yeah, what about you?
So, I'm actually curious of your reasonings behind giving it a 6.5.
Well, the movie's a great film, but right. For me, I wanted it to move a little bit faster than it did.
Okay, that's interesting.
That was just me. But then again, last time I watched it, I didn't even go through the whole thing just because I like the first scene so much. Right. It's sad. For me, it's almost sad to go on to like the second half of the film. But it's a great movie. It's got very good pacing and considering other movies.
Right.
But I would give it a 6.5 just okay. for me.
I was going to give it a 7.5.
Okay.
Just because it's really fast paced in the beginning. It's really, and it does have its areas in the second half where it fluctuates between slow and, mm-hmm. you know, wandering the countryside looking for this one guy. And then there's these moments of actions that's just pocketed in here. So I think it's paced fairly well.
Yeah. You know what? Now that I think about it, I'm not changing my score. But to get more deep into why mine is a 6.5, it would be because the beginning opens so fast.
Okay.
There is no point in the movie, in my opinion, that you get to that same pace. And okay. I think the beginning, if you're going to start fast, right. the end should, you know, have the same amount of excitement relatively.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Yes, you have bits of action through the rest of the film, but the beginning starts so lightning fast, let's say 100 miles an hour. The rest of the movie, at the highest pitch, I think it gets maybe to 65 miles an hour. You know what
okay,
I mean?
Yeah, it seems fair.
Yeah, it doesn't flow. Like, I'm fine. When it got slow, it didn't feel like breaths of air anymore because the beginning was so fast. It just sounds right. like, you know, we're just going slow because we don't really have anything else here.
Oh, okay.
To me.
That's interesting. Yeah. Okay, so.
Still my number one.
Yeah, no, I find that interesting that, yeah. Emotional attachment to the characters, where would you kind of rank that?
Man, anything with Tom Hanks in it. I mean Tom Hanks is just relatable.
The dude
period.
Made me feel for a volleyball. I mean, if he can make you feel emotions toward an inanimate object.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Tom Hanks, he's kind of, I mean, not to go too long on the subject, but I think the whole reason he got famous was in the beginning, just kind of like some of those rom-coms he was in, you know, it was like, he's just kind of a not really that great looking guy, just sort of an average dude that's putting a, you know, just the normal Joe Schmo, John Smith kind of characters, you know. So just because he's in it, that already is going to give it a high rating. I would give it a 7.
A 7?
Yeah, 7 for relatability.
Okay.
Just because they had some good casting and... Right. They did have good enough backstory.
Okay.
For me.
I was going to give it a 7.5.
Okay.
But I was going to give it for two reasons. Tom Hanks, just one. when his character dies, it's, you know, that you really felt for his character. And there's kind of a sense of satisfaction
yep.
in his death. Like you didn't feel like he, like no, that shouldn't have happened. But there was just a sense of at ease
mm-hmm.
when it happened. And then also Matt Damon's character, how he's told his brothers, you know, his brothers died, and so mm-hmm. you got to go home now. And he's just like, no, I'm staying. My brothers are here.
Yeah,
I need to stay with them. And it's just like, wow,
mm-hmm.
I think Matt Damon is a good actor, a great actor, too.
Oh, so excellent. Yeah, he's very good.
So, yeah, 7.5 out of 10, I think, for
all right. That. What about Fury? Have you seen the movie?
Is this like a side tangent?
Oh, no, it was one of the ones on the list. Oh, I didn't know.
No, we still got a couple more things
oh,
to
shoot,
go
sorry. Yeah, no. I didn't know how many we were going through. Okay.
Yeah, I think we...
Yeah, we got FX and casting. FX, I'll give it a 10.
Okay.
I can't think of a better one. What would you give it? I mean, just I'm thinking about the beginning where the guy's going, Mama! You know, like...
Right, yeah.
That looks perfect.
Yeah, and for the most part, the rest of the film is them just kind of tromping through scenery, and they were mostly on site for that. So
I guess also that is probably why it's got such a high rating, is because there's so few things where they need a lot of effects,
right,
that when they did it, it was perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, I'd probably, yeah, I think 10 out of 10 is kind of a fair thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then casting.
Oh, I'd give him a 8.
Okay. I was going to give it an 8 too.
All right. So we agree on that. What are your reasons for giving it an 8?
You know, you do have that star power, from Matt Damon, from Tom Hanks, but then you kind of got these other guys who, I'm not saying that historical films need to have big name people to bring people to watch it, but those big name actors also are big name actors for a reason.
Well, yeah. I wouldn't even just say that they're big name actors for a reason. I would say you might even have a Joe Schmo that might be better for a
right
certain role than a big name actor.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess what I'm saying is they had some people that, yeah, you don't really know who they are. They're almost extras in terms of their, you know, fame, but, they could have done a little bit of a better job with certain characters. Yeah. So yeah, 8 is a high number anyway.
Yep.
That's enough.
So your number one film ranks at an 8.9 in historical accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
For me, in pacing, it ranks 7.5. In emotional attachment, it ranks 7.5. In effects, it ranks 10 out of 10. And casting, 8 out of 10.
All right, so calculating all that up, for me, on my end, it was 40.4. Out of a total of 50.
Okay.
And then for you?
That would be a 10, 18, 16, 26, plus 14. That would be 40 plus... Sorry.
No, you're good.
Big math going on over here.
You're good.
So I have a 41.9 out of 50.
Okay, so 41.9. Man, you like my movie a little bit more than I do. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm kidding. But all right, so that's pretty
good. I find it a lot harder to be harsh about things.
Yeah, no, I got you. I think that we concur for the most part.
Yeah.
Have you seen Fury?
I've not, no.
Okay, so we'll just go to the next one. Tropic Thunder, have you seen that one?
Well, I think for sake of time, we're kind of hitting 38 minutes.
Oh, I gotcha.
I was just going to skip over to Gaisberg. Like, we did your number one. Let's do my number one.
Oh,
You've seen Gaisberg?
I've not seen the whole movie through, unfortunately.
Well, this is going to...
Yeah, no.
Just take my word for it. It's a 10 out of 10 on all ranked categories.
So it's a 50. All right. Yeah. Well, it sounds like we've ended the episode.
No, I think we have to actually walk through in order to do
it. Yeah, no, that's fine. I mean... I'll just go through what I can write about it. But all right, so in terms of historical accuracy for me, I haven't seen the whole movie, but the parts that I have seen were very good. I'll give it a 9.
Yeah, I was going to give it a 9 too, just because you didn't get a full encompass of the battle.
Mm-hmm.
But for sake of time, it's already a 4-hour movie.
Yeah.
I give it a 9.
That makes sense. What about casting?
Casting. We're going all the way down to the bottom. All right.
Oh, sorry. That's second on mine.
Oh, okay. So casting. You know, no big names. There's no big names in this film, I don't think. Unless...
You're wrong.
Unless I'm wrong, but let me just check real quick.
I was going to give it a low number for casting because even though the people they picked did look quite similar to the people in history, you know.
That's
in there. Even though the people they picked did look a lot like the characters in history they were supposed to, they could have gotten some makeup and picked a one or two really, really great actors. You know what I mean?
And that's something that I think I disagree with, is because I actually think that they did a really good job of casting. They didn't cast big names. They just let the actors be the actors. And they just, or let the actors try and portray the role that they were in. They didn't need, you know, big people to come in to it. So for me, I was going to give it a 8 out of 10. Okay, Sam Elliott is probably the biggest name.
Yeah.
In Gettysburg. He plays General John Buford. Cavalry. The Union Cavalry General.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I was going to give it a 8 just because I love how they use all these, like, nobody actors pretty much, but create such a great film. And also, there was no CGI as far as the people who were there. Every single person you ever see on screen is a actual person.
Oh, I didn't actually know that.
Yeah, they are, they enlisted people who, what's that called? When you go to, when you go to a battlefield and you get to recreation. So they they just had a whole bunch of
reenactment people
who just showed up in uniform ready to go.
Oh man, that's
and they're
awesome.
Just like, yeah, let's do this. It's like they just wanted to see a historically accurate film be made.
Yeah, no. And so I for me, I gave them high props for the effort that they made, at least parts that I've seen of it.
Right.
I didn't see any really big name people. Like you said, Sam Elliott is probably the biggest guy in there.
Yeah.
But I would have liked to see a few celebrities because, like you said earlier, there's a reason that they're big names for the most part.
Yeah.
I gave them a 5 because for casting, like in terms of people who know these individuals, it's a 0 for the most part. But for the amount of effort that they put into it and the actual acting skills, it's a 5 or a 6 for me. So, I mean, I'll give it a 5.5. Yeah. I hate to insult you.
And I think, well, I think the one part that really sticks out to me as far that really drives this home is the fact that, or it's this one scene where after Pickett's charge, where he loses pretty much his entire battalion, Lee's trying to figure out, okay, how can I still win this? How can I still win this? And so he just gathers his generals and he's like, all right, Pickett, you lead your men there. And he's just standing crying. He's like, I have no battalion.
Mm.
And it's just like, you made me feel for the people who are supposed to be the bad guys in the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what I really love about this film is that it addresses it on an equal level. It's like, I'm not here to tell you which side is bad, which side is good.
Just historically what happened.
This is what historically happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, pacing.
Pacing, I mean, it's a long film, right?
It is a long film.
That's why I haven't finished it. So, I'll let you go first.
I'm actually going to give this one a 10 out of 10 on pacing.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because even though there are moments where it might feel drawn out, the action is so worth the wait, and the one part I could probably watch over and over and over again is the bayonet charge from the second main, where they're out of ammo, so they just decide to charge down the hill, the hill towards the redcoats, and it's just like
the redcoats,
or not the redcoats. Sorry,
I'm like, wait, maybe I need to rewatch this movie.
I changed genres here. No, towards the Confederates, they just charge. And this was just brilliant planning by the Colonel Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain. And it's like, he's just like, well, I got no ammo, so I'm going to have to charge at them in order to hold the line. So,
yeah, no, I mean, I'm going to give it a good rating for pacing because, honestly, I was 11, okay? I mean, maybe for you it was, like, the best movie ever, but I was more interested in, like, Johnny Test and, you know, cartoons and SpongeBob back in the day.
I didn't want to watch it the first time I watched it.
Yeah?
Mom and Dad forced me to, but after the first time I watched it,
yeah,
I just watched it because I wanted to.
That probably was my issue. I didn't have parents forcing me to watch it the first time. It was more of kind of a DVD on the road type deal. Right. Yeah, I'm going to give it a... I mean, you gave it such a high rating. You've seen the full film. I haven't watched it because I didn't appreciate it probably when I was a kid. I'm gonna just going to give it a 6.5 as a round number. You obviously are going to disagree with me on that, but I just...
Well,
I don't know. I haven't seen the whole movie. Yeah. When I was a kid, I was relatively disinterested. Yeah.
And I think most people would disagree with me on that, because 4 hours for a film is a very long time.
Yeah. But hey, if it's your bread and butter, it's the
right,
you know.
Yeah. Yep.
For some people, having a long movie, like, I don't know why anybody would ever watch the Zack Snyder cut of Justice League, but some people are like, I am so glad that movie is 5 hours. Why can't it be 5 hours, you know?
Why can't it be five more hours?
Exactly. It's, so, you know, sometimes length isn't always a bad thing. Like, all the Harry Potter movies, like you talked about last episode, they're relatively long. I mean, the Deathly Hallows Part 1 and 2, it's like 5 hours combined, right? So,
right.
Those still are great movies.
Yeah. Yep. So this is probably going to be the lowest number I give this movie on as far as emotional attachment goes. Now, I did just talk about Pickett and how he's crying, and it made me feel for them. But as far as emotional attachment to individual characters, it ranks low. So I'm still gonna give it like a 6.5, just because it does a really good job of making me think about all of the people there. And then after going to Gettysburg and seeing the cemetery there, it's like I would even bump it up probably to a 7.
Okay.
Just because it's like it just adds a whole nother layer to it for me.
All right. So for me, like I said, I haven't seen the whole film. Little kid version of me didn't like it that much. It wants to give the 11-year-old in me wants to say, it's a 3.2, you hate this film. But not really. I mean, I've grown to appreciate certain scenes, and I'm going to watch it again after this.
Right.
For me, there wasn't any... When I was a kid, I wasn't really focusing so much on the story as I was, where's the celebrities? So since there's a lack of celebrities, it's still going to be a lower end. But at the same time, the way that those people died in the film... Mm-hmm. Did give it for me that emotional attachment.
Yeah.
So I'll give it a 6.
Yep.
I'll give it a 6.
Okay.
Let's see. Effects. Have we gone over that?
We have not.
Okay.
And this is probably going to be a 10 out of 10 too, because every single effect is practical.
Yeah, I'll give it a very high rating. I'm going to say 9.2. We'll go with a weird number. 9.2. I want to give it a 10, but I can't just because, like, it's amazing what they did. Well, but if they would have just added a little like salt sprinkle of CGI,
I don't even think it needs that, because like I said, all the people you ever see, real people, all the explosions and things going on, that's all real. It's not it makes it feel like it's actually there. You know why? And that's why I really like Gettysburg and giving it such a high rating. It's like I don't need to use all this stuff. I don't need to use CGI because I've got the cannons.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing that might not be accurate are the cannons that the Confederates were using, but that's because there's so few of those left. But it's like, you know, I've got the cannons, I've got the guns. Ooh. Most of the reenactors, they have their own uniforms and guns, so it's like I feel like the costume and makeup people probably had like, we don't really have to do anything. We just have to make sure that the main characters look good and are good.
I give it such a high rating, a 9.2. I mean, for me, that was at the time that I watched it originally. It was the most compelling part of the story.
Yeah.
I mean, who doesn't like explosions and real stuff? But at the same time,
explosions.
I don't know. Maybe it's just the age of the film. It's all aged well. It's great. All of it's good. I don't know. Last time I watched it, I can't point to what is lacking, except for maybe I'd like to see a couple wider shots with a lot more people.
Okay.
But at this, you know, just because there were more people there than they had, it was as accurate as they could get it with the amount of people. But the fact that they only did practical effects with no CGI, they could have copied just one or two faces and it would have looked perfectly historically accurate. I don't know. Like I said, I'm not really one to criticize here because I haven't seen it since I was 11 or 12. But 9.2 is going to be my score. So okay. I guess let's...
I've got a grand total of 44.
44? Okay.
44 out of 50.
All right, let's see. I got to do mine real quick. And
you've got the weird numbers in there, so...
Yeah, it's the decimals that are messing me up. Shouldn't have done that. and the 9.2. All right, so I got a 35.2, okay. But that's, I mean, if I rewatch it,
your opinion doesn't really matter at this point because you haven't actually seen the full film.
Exactly. And hey, I've honestly probably only seen 2/3 of the film, so maybe that's that true. Last third that's will true. Make it a 50. We'll see.
Right.
But, I'll watch it next episode. I'll probably let you guys know where I stand on it.
Well, if it's anything like Hamilton, you still haven't watched it, so I'm not holding my breath.
Hamilton, no, but I did watch Harry Potter. And
that is true.
Yeah. Anyway, well, I think that probably concludes our episode.
Yeah.
It's I like this one. I don't know. Yeah, we don't have time to come up with a dumb skit today. We'll have to do it next time, though.
Yeah. Sorry, guys.
I got a feeling we'll probably just have extras, you know, like the deleted scenes of bloop, KTPO. Bloop, bloop. But anyway, this has been a wonderful episode. Thank you guys for tuning in.
I want to, just before you exit out on us, I wanted to say thank you guys for sticking with us just in case you come back to this. I know it's been... 2 months since we uploaded anything.
It's definitely been much longer than it should have been.
Yeah,
for sure.
And so we're gonna try and stay on top of it.
Yeah, we're gonna try for sure. Exactly. And hey, once again, definitely don't be afraid to email us at ktpo.comments@gmail.com.
We are
really looking for any and all messages or whatever,
we spent an hour and a half trying to fill the pickle jar with some topics.
Yes, that's very true.
I think we added three.
Actually, I did want to give a shout out real quick. So we did have a lady that emailed us. I just checked literally 3 seconds ago.
Cool.
And you said we need to get on topic. But somebody emailed us and the subject line of this just says episode lackage. Dear Bracken and Gabriel, missed the podcast muy mucho. I don't know if this individual is Spanish. You two are a dynamic duo who offer an array of differing yet kosher thoughts and pickled opinions on the same subject. Perhaps you are not walking together on all topics. Amos 3:3. I do not know Amos 3:3. I'll have to look it up. But could walk together on many and continue to individually and corporately be a bright light in this dark world.
Wow.
All right, I guess you're looking up Amos 3:3.
Amos 3:3.
Then it says potential pickle jar topics.
Oh,
we've got a list. Here we go. All right, so we'll have to write these down. Current events and if and how they relate to the end times. Interesting. All right, favorite inventors/inventions of ages past and present. Favorite books and or authors and why. That will probably definitely be something that goes in the pickle jar for sure.
Sorry, what was that?
Favorite books and or authors and why. We've never actually talked about that. I can't believe it. I used to be a real bookworm when I was a kid.
Yeah.
We should do that.
It would be interesting.
Yeah. All right. Time capsule episode. List notable events of 2021. Prices of common goods and services. Personal favorite hobbies or interests at this time. I like that a lot.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I want to try and do that one before college.
Okay.
All right, and then from
next
there,
episode.
They've got one more. It says, if you had a working DeLorean circa 1985, so they've obviously seen Back to the Future, what era would you travel to and why? Blessings to the KTPO boys, and thank you very much. Cool. So we will... we will take this into consideration. And then what's that Amos 3:3 verse?
Amos 3:3 from the non from the New American Standard Bible, says, "Do two men walk together unless they have made an appointment?"
Interesting. I'm going to look that up in the KJV because I want some more context.
Well, this is the most literal translation you're going to get, buddy.
I know. It just sounds foreign to me.
Yeah.
But regardless, you know what? I'm going to look that up later. That was a wonderful piece of mail, and we highly encourage all you guys to give us more emails. We really appreciate them, and we will read, if we can, we'll read the whole thing on air. If not, we'll read excerpts, or you'll just hear them in future episodes. Thank you once again for tuning in. This has been Kosher Thoughts
and Pickled Opinions.
And I'm Bracken.
I'm Gabe. We got to screw it up at least once, right?
yes, for sure. All right, see you next time.
See you next time, guys.
Next time on Kosher Thoughts and Pickled Opinions, two men and one jar is all that stands between peace and the end of the world.
This just in world news. Kim Jong-un has lost weight. North Korean citizens worried about the Almighty Lord's physical health. Also, in other news, Florida man succeeds in robbing a Wendy's drive-thru of three large sweet teas and two 20-packs of chicken nuggets with his 3.5-foot-long assault alligator named Fred.
Will an electrically charged debate over the world's greatest inventors turn these neutral friends into opposite charges?
No! It's Thomas Edison! 1,093 patents can't be wrong. Plus, he invented batteries. Ever heard of DC?
You can take your DC and shove it up your alternating current.
Yours truly, Tesla.
Or will something as simple as an argument over the cultural impact of differing literary works separate two brothers forever?
Dude, the masterpiece that is The Fellowship of the Ring is unparalleled in all works of fiction, making it unequivocally the best. Therefore, it cannot be denied. I said it cannot be denied as the one book to rule them all.
Gabe, hear me out, man. I just don't think you are fully grasping the far-reaching influence the monster at the end of this book had on small American children across the world in the early 2000s.
Tune in next time for Bracken and Gabriel's most enthralling episode ever, ever, of KTPO. Oh.